Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. I'm your host, Rick Campos. This podcast episode is sponsored by Design Biz Assistant, our latest contribution to the design community. This new and exciting program offers one-on-one business support to professional designers just like you. Do you need help balancing management and creativity as it relates to your interior design business? Is there a business program that you've been meaning to implement, but you just can't find the time to roll it out? Design Biz Assistant just might be your solution. To learn more, visit our website, designbizsurvivalguide.com, and click the consulting tab for more information and to schedule your consultation. Now on with the show. Today, we welcome Sarah Strader of Sarah Strader Textiles. In this episode, Sarah shares her journey from interior designer to furniture designer to her current venture in hand-blocked textile design. We talk about the pros and cons of having multiple ventures in play at the same time and how she refined her business model without sacrificing adventure and creativity. We also dig into visibility and how Sarah leveraged her years of networking and connections to launch her textile line in true go big or go home fashion. Let's get started.
5 years from now, I'll trend again.
All right, let's get down to business. Okay, otherwise, we're going to be here all day.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. So welcome to the podcast, Sarah Strader.
Thank you, Mr. Campos.
So glad that you agreed to join us and be a part of the podcast.
Well, it's really hard to say no to you.
Well, you know.
There is that.
There's that. So listen, I want to talk about you and your business and the business of design, but I want to start by talking about you so that the listeners can kind of play catch up and understand who you are as a business person, what your current business model is, and then we'll kind of dig into how you got there.
Okay, so I went to art school and I wanted to be a furniture designer. And when I went, when I was applying to art school, the college recruiter basically said, why would you want to stop at just a piece of furniture when you can design a whole house or like a whole room or a whole concept or a whole space? And I was like, well, that sounds like really fun. So I was like, why not control every aspect of everything in the whole world?
Right.
So I graduated with my degree from Detroit from an art school and with interior designer. Mm-hmm. A minor in industrial design furniture and a second minor in graphic design.
Oh.
So basically you just learned how to do it all.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And the way that we were taught through the business kind of class that we took was like, it was all like a bunch of Word documents for paper invoices and purchase orders. And I was like, this is the most complex, confusing slew of like nonsense. I have to have all kinds of Word documents for this because that was clearly well before they weren't teaching you QuickBooks or
right.
or now this new amazing Ivy and all these other things that like track all this stuff. There's mm-hmm. all kinds of inventory tracking systems these days.
So basically they scared the hell out of you with the business side of design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was well, when you're not sleeping anyway, all that paperwork just drive is just like overwhelming. We haven't slept for 4 days. So I graduated and moved across the country to California and got a job at a big development and urban planning company. Mm-hmm. And they basically build a city from the ground up.
Wow.
They did Triangle Square. They built Dubai. Like mm-hmm. it was a really intense company to work for. And I worked for a very microscopic like portion mm-hmm. And did 3D models, 3D rendering, AutoCAD, all kinds of really, really technical
right.
things that had some glam aspects to it. And then I was like, a couple of years deep, I was like, this can't be it. Like, I feel like I'm just taking their money and I'm bored.
Uh-huh.
I was like, this just can't be what I'm supposed to do for the next 20 years of my life.
Right.
So I applied for a job on the internet and then got hired and worked for a really amazing designer in LA, commuted from Irvine to LA for quite some time and just fell in love. I was like the second assistant. So mm-hmm. I was like, you know, the second assistant.
All right. The assistant to the assistant.
Yes, totally. But I didn't have any problem with that because I ran around the design center, knew everybody right. and fell in love with just selecting all of the finishings. Mm-hmm. And I was on a wild goose chase hunt one time for this floral fabric. This is very broad. Floral fabric, pink and green, Osborne Little.
Right.
How many of those do you think actually exist?
Sure, sure.
Because there's probably like 300. Yeah. And I pulled every single one. And then we had it in the design library. Because I laid them all out
right.
to present it, to find this one fabric for a little girl's room. And it still wasn't the right one.
Right.
So I couldn't believe like myself running around in high heels. Like, you know, you have to look fabulous because you're in LA. Like jeans were not as mainstream or right. acceptable, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years ago as they are now. Like you wore a suit and every one of the showrooms wore suits. So mm-hmm. that's just like how business was done.
Right.
But I learned so much and then I fell in love with fabrics and design and then I actually worked for my dad's company for a while, mm-hmm. helping him with all his graphic design and marketing and city planning stuff and architectural drawings and
right.
just lots of different aspects, different pieces. And then I moved back out of LA and I moved to LA briefly. I got too many parking tickets to deal with. And then I moved back home, lived with my parents for a little while, applied to the New York School of Interior Design, got in with a full fellowship, and then I met my now husband,
right?
Who was like, why do you want to go off to school when you could just start your own company? Because he had his own company. So I was like, well, yeah, why would I do that? So because I was like, I feel like as creative people, when we feel like we get a little lost, mm-hmm. we either need to like reinvent ourselves or go back to school or learn something or dive into something like head first. Like I was about to move to New York. Which yeah. basically you need like your firstborn child and a blood test to get a lease.
Yeah, yeah.
Or now you've got a like super second sublease from somebody to even get in. Like it was not easy getting an apartment. Mm-hmm. I needed like 8 letters of reference. And I was like, why is this so hard? Like here, I could buy a house for less.
Right.
I mean, than get an apartment in New York. So I just deferred. And then I, you know, coming from working for a really high-end designer, I was able to, like, I was always drawing. I do 3-point perspective drawings, but in pencil. Like, mm-hmm. I just love all of that stuff. I do things that people just don't even do anymore.
Right, right.
Because I feel like it's great if you can do, like, SketchUp and CAD and all these wonderful things. But if you're not able to communicate your ideas super fast, mm-hmm. like, sitting across from someone. Like, I draw upside down on a napkin sitting across from somebody.
You're
like,
one of those.
This? Like, I don't even have to see it that way. Like,
yeah.
I do stuff for my husband all the time because he's like, he draws perspective and it's so wanky-jank. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're doing. So it's like I'm just quickly doing things all the time. And it seems like those finite things can come and those finite details happen mm-hmm. like really easily. But it's like my brain moves so fast. Mm-hmm. If I'm not able to get it out fast and on paper and sketch it and draw and onion skin and layer and layer and layer,
right.
then it's just sitting at the CAD or sitting at SketchUp is going to just like,
sure.
It's just like, it doesn't move fast enough for my brain.
Right. Right.
I got to like, and I draw on the windows and I'm yeah. just like some crazy person.
Well, it's kind of the opposite of what technology is supposed to be. Technology is supposed to be there to help make things happen faster. But the mm-hmm. reality is to fire up the computer, to open up CAD or SketchUp, and then do everything you need to do to create that illustration, you could have sketched it in half the time,
yeah.
a fraction of the time.
Yeah. And yeah. I taught CAD when I was in school. I was a tutor. So, and I'm like a two-handed CAD person. I'm typing and like clicking versus like clicking across the whole screen. Mm-hmm. When I watch people do that, I'm like, oh my God, I'm watching paint dry. Like, and I watch paint dry all day long because I hand print fabric. So I started like designing furniture. Mm-hmm. Little did I know how expensive of an endeavor I had just chewed off.
Right.
Well, it's also when you're aligning yourself with the best manufacturer mm-hmm. and you're not cutting corners and you're making and designing products that are going to be even more difficult and more expensive for someone to knock you off.
Right.
Now you're paying a premium for that.
Sure.
But every finish was impeccable. Everything was just impeccable.
So let me interrupt you for a mm-hmm. second. So what prompted you to start the furniture line as opposed to kind of go full scale residential interior design? Or did you do that first and then did it transition to designing the furniture or did you just kind of fast forward to the furniture?
I did that. I went into residential interiors. Mm-hmm. But I've always kind of had like a side spinning project.
Yeah.
Like it almost is like it wasn't enough for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know that kind of sounds a little insane.
No, I actually can totally relate to it. And that's one of the things I love about you because we can always be like, hey, Sarah, what do you got going on the side? What do you, we're, we're those people.
I mean, what plates am I throwing in the air on the left hand side? When I'm like a duck on a pond, like, oh, I'm doing great. And then I'm like frantically paddling
under
like
that water.
22 other things and like hiding it and hoarding it so no one can see it.
It's
no
exciting.
One can find out
that. It's exciting.
So I've always kind of had like a side passion project because it just never felt like it was enough. And I was, I don't want to say hashtag blessed or whatever's trending because that's not even, I feel like and I don't even think luck has anything to do with it. I think I just fell into the right places at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had challenging clients. I had some clients things didn't work out so great with. But I always believe like, leave it better than you found it. I think I've only given one refund.
Right.
Because it was a legality issue. I gave one refund my entire career. and it just felt morally right. Like I was like, we could just move on and I can give you some big explanation, but
right.
Here's a cashier's check. Let's just move on with our lives.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And I just felt like it just needed to close. And sometimes kind of doing that olive branch situation gets you back in the flow of like the river and the flow and the cycle of like abundance and money. And you have to like, you get money so you can spend it. You don't get money to hoard it.
Right. Right.
I mean, it has to go in and out, right? It has to come in to go out.
Right.
You get clients money to buy them goods.
Yep.
And they're paying for goods and services. So, I kind of closed I was in a couple showrooms. My very first showroom was a State of Design at Stone Mill Design Center. And I walked in there with my four little pieces of furniture and then the rest of it drawn in CAD and rendered and hand rendered and photographed and photoshopped because I taught myself all those things because, of course, you need to know that when you cannot afford super expensive people and when you have the time to, like, be psycho about it, you know, you can do whatever you want.
Right.
So I went into my very first showroom and she put all my pieces on the floor. And then she was so supportive. Jean Gerhardt owned State of Design, and now it has transferred, and it's now the studio of DRC.
Right.
So, and now it's all in the same, you know, big section of the design center. But this was like many, many years ago. And she took my product, and then when I decided to, I went to India, and then I was like seeing them print fabric in the street.
Right.
Like yards and yards. I mean, and we're not even talking like, our idea of man-made rustic is like their everyday life. Like they're barefoot wearing like a t-shirt and a munda, like which basically looks like a sarong wrap. And they're just like out there just sweating it out, printing fabric. And I was like, I have done this since high school. I was always printing on my clothes and my jeans. And my mom's like, can you stop printing on your stuff? Like, can you stop bleaching things? Can you stop? Like, I'll bleach a t-shirt with a little print. She's like, can you stop printing on things? Right. I can't keep buying you new stuff. Everyone's going to know you've worn the turtle jeans 5 days this week. Like, stop doing it. So I was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
I've done this forever. So I came home and I sketched up my, you know, little patterns and started hand carving stuff out and, you know, buying things that were readily accessible to me, testing like bags and bags of paint. And then I would have to clean it all up and, you know, get back to my design business and then print on the weekend and get back to my design business.
And then still deal with the furniture, which was happening simultaneously.
Yep.
Okay. So it's a totally different game. Like when you're, you know, from residential interior design, there's a totally different level of expectation, a totally different day-to-day, and a totally different interaction, it sounds like, than there is when you transition to this furniture design concept. You're introduced to a whole new set of people who can help you design and actually manufacture these goods and then service them and ensure the quality.
Of course. And I think a lot of those contacts you make and realize who can make what when you're dealing with, even if you're making custom products through design, sometimes you're not always making custom products. You're sourcing through the showrooms and then you can call that manufacturer and see if they can do custom or what they do, or they'll refer you to someone who is a custom build shop. But all those big names like Nancy Corzine, they all started using somebody first before they had their own factories and facilities.
For sure.
You know, everybody started utilizing someone somewhere. And I've seen her factory and it's absolutely breathtaking.
Right.
But they build it all in house now. But at one point in her career, that probably didn't happen.
No.
So you just have to And I didn't have a lot of trial and error, thank goodness. And I started with, not upholstery, case goods. Like,
right.
Let me just bite off the biggest thing that I can chew,
yeah,
and make it super hard and amazing.
Right.
And did like basket weaving of like bent wood, really hard shapes, and then had to have cut glass built for things. I mean, there's things that you just, as designers, I think we envision how a piece is used, mm-hmm, until it ends up in someone's home and you see someone throw their keys on it. And you're like, oh, that's a $10,000 side table.
That's not gonna
or whatever
work.
It is. Yeah, and then yeah, you're like, okay, so we should get a piece of glass cut for that. Like,
for sure.
Here's a dish for your keys. You're immediately sourcing something completely different to remedy that situation.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants a really expensive, beautiful anything, mm-hmm, to have someone just throw something down. And it may not even be the homeowner. It might be that first time they have company over.
Sure.
And you just, nobody knows what things cost.
And you want to be able to use the piece.
Exactly.
Yeah. You want it to function.
You got to have a good glass guy.
There you
go. Have things cut, templated, delivered. I've been that route.
Clearly you're very resourceful. And I think that's one of the things that I've always been excited about when we talk, and when we talk about business and we talk about your adventures of design, from, you know, residential design to furniture design to fabrics, which we'll get to in a moment. But I know you well enough to know that you're very, very resourceful. And I think that that takes a certain level of dedication and just kind of engagement. You know, you and I've had this conversation before about innovation, but You do. I have found that it really is about not settling, innovating, reinventing yourself, and not being afraid, putting it out there and being accountable for it. I think that's the only way to get the full experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, based on your journey, it's like, yeah, you know, you did all the right thing. You checked all the boxes. You went to art school. You came back. You explored the design. You explored design at the same level that I think so many of us do. We come straight back from design school, straight into residential, maybe not realizing that there's a whole other world out there. And that's what excites me about what you do, is you started kind of on a common ground, and then you're like, okay, here we go. I'm going to dabble in some furniture. I'm going to experience this. And then I'm going to dabble in fabrics, and I'm going to experience that. And I think that whole exploration of design is going to be inspiring for anybody that's listening, because I think there's so many of us who are equally as curious, mm-hmm, but are maybe afraid to take that journey to explore a little bit.
Yeah. I also think I had the unique opportunity to work for a very high-end luxury designer, which you did as well, mm-hmm, who also had his own furniture collection, mm-hmm, in the PDC, mm-hmm, and kind of all over. He had, you know, a PR firm. He, you know, like the whole experience. He was creating his first textiles collection with a really big company. Mm-hmm. And it was quite, and I was like, oh, this is just what you do. This is what you do.
Right.
Like, you do everything. Like, yeah, this is what you do. And I was like, okay.
Here,
like,
we go.
This is what you do. And I will never forget the conversation he had with me. He's like, oh, it takes 20 years to be an overnight success.
Right.
And I was like, wait a second. What?
20 years.
20 years? Okay. I'm like 12 deep. Give my second breath.
Here we go.
You know, so you kind of have to like go down a path and ride it until it bucks you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then go down another path, or go down them all at once. Like,
right,
you know?
But it takes time. And I'm so glad you said that, because we live in a world of instant gratification and everybody thinks that everything happens overnight. And the reality
it
does take 20 years to become an overnight success. It does.
And then
it,
they're like,
does.
Where did this person come from? They're everywhere.
Let's talk about the fabric line now. So the door closed on the furniture line.
The door closed on the furniture line when I decided to install it all in my own house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. I was now the proud owner of a lot of wonderful things.
And you learned from that experience.
I did.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a blessing, because I don't remember what I learned, but I just remembered it wasn't right to continue.
Right, right.
Because everybody wanted stuff. All the showrooms wanted stuff,
yeah,
but they want you to pay for it.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, so my expansion rate has a ceiling at this point,
right,
without, you know, being self-funded,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
without getting a business loan or getting a loan or jacking up a credit card or,
sure,
you know, being self-funded, my reach had a limit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then I got inspired in a different direction.
So for anyone that hasn't seen your fabrics, explain to us a little bit about your process, because it's very unique.
I never even looked at what anybody else was doing. I never looked at what any other company was doing. I just started sketching in a sketchbook, and then I'd copy them and blow them up on the copy machine and change the scale and then figure out what I could carve and how I could carve it. And even how I carve them now by hand has changed.
Right.
Like, I started with a really rudimentary set of tools, like, and now, like, I literally sit there and hand carve out every single motif.
Your blocks.
My blocks. I do them myself.
Wow.
I hand draw them. I change proportions, see how they're going to interlock with, like, tracing paper, figure out the repeat and the size across a 54-inch wide fabric, and then you've got 2 inches for salvage, so it's only printable at 52. And some fabrics come in, you know, 54, 55, 56.
Right.
So it's just however much salvage is on the edge. And I was printing on a bunch of different grounds and a bunch of crazy color concepts, like, in my head. And then, of course, I was like, I'm going to launch this fabric collection
in
the most amazing way possible. So I decided to have a fashion show outside of, in our loft in Santa Ana, outside the roll-up door, because it's set up for, like, art walk situations. And then I found that I had to get a city permit to have them walk on the sidewalk.
Right.
Which I had to get from Homeland Security.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Just because we were impeding the sidewalk that belonged to the city and not to me.
Uh-huh.
But people were stopping. Traffic was stopping. And, you know, through having Design Nexus, I was able to get a lot of fun sponsors. California Planscapes are bringing trees. And, like, it was all Bollywood themed. Right. So
it was a production.
It was a whole production. I had someone do the music. We had cameras, headpieces. Like, it was super intense.
Right.
So, of course. And people loved it way more than just me holding up fabric.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to have a party.
That was a really unique way to show the fabrics. That was really exciting. And this was, like, pre-Project Runway. This was pre-Designer Runway, which is an Orange County thing. Like, that was cool.
Yeah, and some showroom people came, and then they wanted to carry my stuff. And and then, you know, I did it again at a bigger scale down at towards Fashion Triangle Square. And it was a Moulin Rouge-based show with all kinds of apparatuses and runway and live singing. And it just is what I became known for. And then it just kind of became unattainable to, like, do it more and more and more. Like, I don't know how you, other than riding it on an elephant, I really don't know how it could have got bigger than that.
Right, right.
You know?
I think at that point, anybody that knew you and had been present for your journey through design knew at that stage, whatever you were going to do, whatever you were bringing to the table, it was going to be legit. You had set the bar. They knew that you were dedicated. We knew it was going to be amazing. So I think that this whole journey that we just talked about that led you here was A, very necessary.
Mm-hmm.
B, obviously tons of lessons. And C, like, it reinforces my belief that there are no shortcuts in life.
I agree. I don't think there are. And then that was sort of the turning point. That second showcase was sort of the turning point to just cut my business in half and discontinue doing interior design.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went full on into fabric, which is kind of a scary risk, right?
Well, sure.
Because what if it doesn't
sell?
But
I think we've already established that you're quite fearless.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we all go through different chapters in our life for sure.
Yeah.
And then when, and then it changed even again, you know, when I had a shift, well, you know, my personal journey about, like, losing weight and getting, like, really physically fit and, you know, losing over 60 pounds and keeping it off for the last year and a half. It kind of, like, shook my confidence a little bit. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, you should feel so amazing. And it's really hard for people to tell you how you think you should feel.
Right.
Right. And now, I mean, I was used to being this very tall kind of, you know, larger than life, like, and I was a little fluffy, I'm not gonna lie, you know, but just, I feel like I had to, I was comfortable being that.
Right.
Because people knew me for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became like, everyone only knew me for the fact that I lost weight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then anytime I was at an event, it was like, oh, you know, it was just always the hot topic of conversation. And it was always at a volume that almost made me feel really uncomfortable.
When you just want to talk about,
like,
fabrics.
When they're, like, really loud about it. And I'm like, I just feel kind of embarrassed. Like, I don't know what to do.
You're like, let's talk about, like, fabrics instead.
What did you do to yourself? And I was like,
wow,
I don't really know how to respond to this. So it's not always going to be, it's not always like cupcakes and rainbows. Like, it's just not.
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting that I don't think a lot of people talk about the fact that there are a lot of things in our personal lives that happen mm-hmm. that also contribute to reshaping and reinventing our business. And in this case, maybe reinvigorating your business, because you kind of implied that you were kind of in a lull, but you're not anymore. Let's talk about the key questions really quick. Let's get into the key questions, because everybody waits for them.
Okay, go.
All right, ready?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So what would you say is the secret to your survival?
You know, getting, not being afraid to pick other people's brains who have done this for 20 years, because I feel like people do want to share with you. And I had an amazing conversation, a very brief conversation, but with Thomas Lavin at one of the markets, mm-hmm. Maybe a year ago. And I hadn't seen him for a while. He's always very sweet. He always remembers who I am. He's very, very kind. And he said that he doesn't work on the weekends anymore. Sunday, he spends about an hour in the morning before everyone else gets up, just kind of prepping for his week. Mm-hmm. He's like, but this industry, to have longevity, you've got to do it in moderation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you like burning the candles at both ends in the middle. Like, I've done that for a long time. But then you experience burnout and you blow up and you collapse. And then you've got to, like, I think keeping the momentum going for as long as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And without crashing and burning.
Yeah.
And then having to, I think starting again is even harder than continuing to keep moving.
Yeah. That burnout is very real.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no one has talked about it, but people are starting to talk about it.
Yeah.
And
I think like twice a year I completely collapse and like I'll cry about something. And now that I've been with my husband now, we're celebrating our 5-year anniversary next week.
Awesome.
And but we've been together for 12 years as of next week. He used to want to fix me in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And now he realized, oh, just let her go for 10 minutes and she'll be fine in half an hour.
Right,
and
then I'm like, bounce right
I'm
back.
Like, all right, I'm good. Let's go. Like, he's like, let me give her a snack. Just throw a snack at her, a little protein shake. She'll come right back.
She'll be fine.
You know, but it's real. And, I'm not afraid of rejection. Mm-hmm. I really put myself out there. Mm-hmm. However, like what I do is so emotionally charged because there's so much of like who I am in what I do.
Right.
I think designers are the same way. But I've kind of like cut my business in half and then narrowed in again and narrowed in even farther, mm-hmm. you know, to such a, like a scope, mm-hmm. Where it is personal.
Yeah.
And what if you don't like it?
Yeah.
I feel like you don't like me.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like my stuff.
Right, right.
So, and I don't want to ever feel like I'm like hawking my wares.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and I know that's not what people are saying, you know, but I just feel like it's like, you're telling me you don't like me.
Right. Which is not
when
the case
when that's not
at
the
all.
Case.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that color is just not for you right now.
Right.
And I don't follow trends. I literally just pour out whatever's in me to pour out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so personal and it's so emotional and when someone's like, oh, will that repeat really line up? And I'm all, no, it's a watercolor. Like, it depends on how many fans I have on. It depends on how much paint I put on. It depends on how wet the fabric is. And it's going to take 12 hours to dry before I can move it. So you want to know why it's so expensive?
Yeah.
Come over and watch me do it.
Right, right, exactly.
So there's about to be a whole video series coming out of how it's actually done.
That's going to be fun.
So, because I feel like I've told people what I do.
Yeah.
But to see it and to see it hand-carved and to see it, like actually done mm-hmm. is going to be a completely different experience. And people have asked me all the time, will you do a live demo or do you not want people to see how you do it? I go, oh, I don't care. Nobody wants to work as hard as I work.
Well, like, and it's no secret. They're doing it on the streets in India.
I know.
Hello.
But it's not a secret. But I don't think people want to be covered in paint and have to scrub, like with your 1-year anniversary, I was scrubbing paint off my body trying to get to your thing. And I was like, I'm just going to wear the fanciest dress I have right now. I don't care if it's a ball gown. I'm showing up.
That's right.
And I was like, well, at this point, like I'm clean, so I might as well do it.
Yeah.
But there's so many things I've shown up with paint in my hair or paint in my eyebrow. And I had no idea. No one's ever told me. You know, but I'm kind of who I am. I'm brash. I'm kind of ballsy, mm-hmm. you know, kind of smart mouth, like, but I think it's just, I'm just who I am.
You're authentic is what you are. And I think that that says everything, really. I mean, I think that's the ultimate secret to survival, wouldn't you say? So, Sarah, what would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then?
Don't fight it so hard. I think I read something the other day, just the other day, that if beating yourself up actually spawns success, you'd be rich, thin, and famous. And no one will ever be harder on me than me.
Sure, we're our own worst critic.
Right?
No one's harder on us but than ourselves. You're right. You're totally right.
So, but why do I, and I was like, why do I need to be hard on myself? I'm effing amazing. Like, I mean, I just don't think I tell myself that enough, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I look at other, what my husband tells me all the time, comparison is poison.
It is.
And I'm like, oh, wow, like, you know, you're crushing it, husband. He's like, comparison's poison, comparison's poison. And I was like, God, like, and I was driving to the gym this morning thinking like, man, ain't that the truth? Like, is he going to tell our kids that growing up? Like, I remember my dad telling me forever, if the dream is big enough, the facts don't matter. And that's how I've lived my life.
Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
Well, I'm willing to tell anybody who wants to learn how to do this. You know, like, I honestly don't think people don't work that hard. I think my biggest is I treat people how I want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I don't hold anyone to a level of expectation or delivery that I don't hold myself to. Mm-hmm. Now, on a lot of levels, that leaves me disappointed mm-hmm. and people, but I'm not going to stop being who I am.
Right.
I still, even some relationships that have gone awry, I still feel like they're going to do right by me, like someday down the road.
Right.
Even though I've known you for so long that like you probably won't, but I'm still hopeful.
Yeah.
So, but just not like, I'm not worried about what anybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't compare yourself to anybody on social media or Instagram. That's all the sparkly, glittery stuff that people want you to see.
And by you putting that message out there, and I know you are that person with everyone that you know, and you've been that person with me ever since I've known you. And I think that's the service, that's your give back. And sometimes people don't necessarily know what they're receiving at the moment.
Uh-huh.
But I would agree that, I mean, that's a huge contribution. Now that we know all about you mm-hmm. and all about your products and all about your fabric, for those people who haven't seen it, how do we get to see it? Where do we go?
Okay, so if you are in Southern California, it's at DRC, the amazing like 50,000 square foot showroom. Our pillows are there. Our fabrics are in the back room. And they're in San Diego mm-hmm. at DRC. And they're in North Carolina at Karen Saks in both of their locations. You can also see it on the website at sarahstrader.com. Very complex, I know. Also, the same address is sarahstratertextiles.com. Super complex, I know.
Write it down.
Is also the Instagram, Sarah Strater Textiles, or at Sarah Strater Textiles, right. Is where all of our stuff is.
Perfect, perfect. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I appreciate you. I appreciate the fact that you're an open book and that you were so willing to share your journey, because like I said earlier, I really think that so many of us are on that same journey. We're on similar paths and we are enduring similar obstacles. And to hear your story and to hear how you just overcome and innovate and reinvent and all of those things are not just words. Those are real life actions that build people and build businesses. So I appreciate you sharing with us.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So in the interest of full disclosure, I've been friends with Sarah for 10 years, and she's been an integral part of my business support system the entire time, and continues to be an inspiration to me to this day. Her energy and her can-do attitude helped carry me through some pretty bleak times when the economy had all of us asking ourselves, "What have I gotten myself into?" Sarah is an innovator. She admittedly always has something going on behind the scenes. She's very cognizant of the big picture, and she's not afraid of a challenge. I believe that one of the many reasons she's been so successful is that she doesn't rely on others to bring her vision to fruition.
Of course, there's a village of trades, artisans, and support staff that help facilitate her vision. But ahead of all of that, Sarah brought a fully designed and executed plan to the table for every interpretation of her career. Thank you, Sarah, for being an open book and touching on the realities of the business of design, including personal trials that affect our business, burnout, meltdowns, and the vital role that our spouses play when we're balled up on the floor in tears, which happens to the best of us. Yes, it does. If you take one thing away from this podcast interview, let it be this. Be real. Be authentic. Be yourself. You are good enough. You are. If this podcast was helpful to you, the very best thing you can do is pay it forward and share it with fellow classmates, design professionals, and anyone else you think may benefit. If you're listening on iTunes, please take a moment to rate the podcast and leave a review. This really helps us become more visible to the design community. For you design professionals interested in our new Design Biz Assistant concept, visit the website designbizsurvivalguide.com to learn more and to submit your request for a consultation. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, get out there and inspire.